Patrick would be here tonight, but he couldn't get up the stairs. So Mary sends her regards also. I'm very glad to be here, really, in Cork. And as Paul said, I was born in Yall and walking through Yall yesterday. And the house actually where I grew up in is still there. And I was with Liam, who was at the bar, and we had a great old walk around the town. And certain things struck me about Yall again, but I'll deal with it at another time, yeah. I did enjoy going through that Watergate road. I believe it was the road that Cromwell left Ireland. He probably rode through that road on his way to the sea forever and never to come back. I'm going to begin with some poems from the well, and I'll finish with some new poems that I'd like to read.
If I get my list.
Jennifer Matthews wrote a kind review of this book, and I'd like to read the poems that Jennifer mentioned in the review in Southward, which is a magazine well worth supporting. The first poem is Visiting Ireland with My Father-in-Law. And my father-in-law is Spanish. Can anybody guess why?
Your wife is Spanish.
Correct. So, but I kept my Irish vocation.
What's that page?
Right, first point, 38. Visiting Ireland with my father-in-law, Manuel Gutierrez. On reaching Houston Station, you praised the Galway hooker for ambience and quality of drink, but voiced a sour note boarding the train for Cork. Dirt outside the clean interior. Was this an omen for how the journey would be? Finding fault at any opportunity, sprinkling the experience with Andalusadas, Cadiz pride blinding the view with Europe's first streetlights. But as you gaze out the window, hay rolled silently in the mind. Drizzled field animals fed from your hands, and wild flowers vied with a palette of greens for the praiseworthy comet. That eye for exquisite detail sharpened my own and kept me focused on local knowledge regarding creameries and crops, rivers and farms, and how it all once fitted into the community. I could have been with my father traveling the hungry mile through one-stop towns for the sale of a dozen whiskey, silence and talk strengthening the bonds we were building. Those same eyes found their true cast on reaching the sea, your element and home, with scales on your boots, familiar memory of Mercia Madrid, boats in the harbour at the ready. In the midst of things new and wonderful. I saw a young man talking fish in Castletown Bay, or rising at 5 in Union Hall to meet the catch off the trawler and send it to a family of 9. But what of the scenery on the road to Dingle? Each bend a revelation, greeted with the exclamation, "Que barbaridad!" Colourful villages by the Atlantic pull and call at your heart's abode. If only you could have it all over again, you said without words on the return leg from Killarney. Bright eyes lost in reflection, contemplating Milagros in Robledo, unpacking first impressions from others. In Madrid, as you know, a couple of years ago, there was something that happened that all of us here in this bar, in one shape or form, lived through, and it happened again to me and to others here, also present, Alaya and Steve. And I went to work with this in my mind, having fed my children breakfast when the radio announced the event, the barbarity. Another 11th in the library for my students. Today I went to work with the weight of death and mutilation in my shoulder bag, incalculable loss like sinking stones in my pockets, the pens and pencils rattling to the sound of severed bones across the floor of a bombed train, the books and papers smeared with destiny's blood stopped in its tracks. Opening the library door, I saw everything in its place except myself. The tidy shelves and shiny plants, hoovered carpet and clean glass reflection. But my chair was no longer mine, beside a desk that pined for somebody else, the in-tray for the reach of another hand. Then duty slowly called me to my station in the face of a child who needed a book about animals in danger of extinction. I'm often asked why I write, and it's a perennial problem. It's not an easy question to answer. So I decided to try and answer this with this point. Conversations with plaques. In my stride along the same route home from work all year round, I use the distance to unwind, kick myself into moods to tackle ideas impatient for contemplation. When least expected, I am joined for a block or two by Hernandez, who slows me to a snail's pace more suited to shepherds with time to kill or poets who have found their rhythm. I learn much from him as we walk along Conde de Peñalvar, touching on cradle songs seeds of the onion, or the three hearts, life, love, death, then he is gone back to his prison. Now an old woman's home. But I am not alone for long. Quiet as a butterfly, Lorca slips in. He talks about his childhood in Granada, how he is fearful of departure, and why he must run naked again in the meadow, show the mobs what they are made of, try and stop the hemorrhage with verse. Before I reach my front door, he is readying to leave his rooms on Alcala, prepare his farewells. Later, as I sit at my table and think about the company I keep, I know exactly what I must do.
A friend of mine, Anna, whom I think has just left, on his cycled from Cork to Castle Grove the other day. This is a similar bicycle journey, but a bit longer. I'd like to read it for Anna here. Taking stock. Travellers, there is no path. Paths are made by walking. Antonio Machado. With half the Appian Way behind us, allow me conduct some honest inventory. Measure what is still intact. My sons are quitting up for dance floors barred to me. Their mother readies her cinema self to lead me to my reality. I watch in awe how life slips through my fingers, subtle as needles knitting new stories. Know why the inevitable is not worth the effort of futile contemplation, while we endure the weight on thin shoulders, love on despite erosion. Let me fix on the personal, the art in what is uniquely found because of casual destiny. Simple things, but universal. That first taste of deception, footing the miserable road home out of Dublin after bands walk off and we still listening. Or that bicycle tour of the West, noted but lost, still haunting like Connemara fields, or tent, a classroom of free talk without teachers amidst the unschoolhouse room. The stroll back from that Fodrick's public house after a night of music and crack of Guelda, between the famine dead lit by a touchable moon. Or those abandoned boots beside a sparse tree in Spittle. Other matters demand attention, but we choose what to ignore. The private cravings of the heart, a lame excuse for war. No, I will leave them aside to concentrate on bare essentials. Such stock makes truth of our lives, not headlines, but what survives. I have paced enough of the house like a dog in search of its spot to bury its bone. It is time to sit and write this down. Thank you. It's really an explanation as to why I write also. I did that conversation with Flack. This is an explanation that tries to show how somebody takes a pen and writes it down. The ending is simply all about the beginning, and that's what one does. You wander around. It's a bit like Des writing that Tipperary poem, the Tipperary book, finding it and writing it. I think I'll move to some new points now. So please bear with me. This is a very limited point. One's life is a constantly in turmoil. Fonsi and Benny. Fonsi and Benny. When Benny Amino Gili alighted from Limerick Station, he met Fonsi Renan outside the railway hotel. "Welcome," he said. "You brought the house down in Dublin last night, and I was glad you met a friend from long ago, Madame Sheridan, Maggie from Mayo." Jeannie, surprised to hear this news vendor's rapport, inquired if we were coming to the concert that evening. "I would if I had a ticket," replied Fonsi. "Everybody wants to hear Caruso's successor." And with that, Geely insisted he accept a complimentary. The next morning, he came to the papers, and Fonsi mentioned that his rendering of Ponchielli's La Gioconda was superb, and thanked him for the invitation. "No, no," Geely protested. "Thank you for allowing me to see." Years later, Fonsi talked about postcards from Benny, but what did he mean by allowing him to see? I often asked and never got an answer. Perhaps it was, as Montaigne said, because it was him, because it was me. To a lovely place with Pilar and the boys in Andalusia a couple of years ago, and it was called, I'll read the poem, I think. Baghdad in Cordoba, in Andalusia. In El Riposo de Baghdad, the desert heat of the street vaporizes by the fountain in the center of the patio. An abundance of flora, perfume and shade the cool tiled interior that hums of harmony. We take tea on enormous floor cushions in a room decorated with florid script on pastel painted walls. Such tranquility is odd. When I read the day's news from the invaded city, death and destruction, the source of our pity, here in calm Cordoba, where the coexistence of differing cultures take heart from each other, Al-Andalus, Christian, Jew, at one in a resting place, far from that Western stew. I tried to tackle a very difficult poem in this one, and it's up to you to decide if it works or not. Rewind. In the occupied territories, there are Jewish-only roads. People wait for hours at checkpoints to have numbers stamped on their arms. A more complete picture, Jews of striped pyjamas. I am reminded of a man who rolled up his sleeve to show me his number. He was a proud survivor. I thought of the camps and skeletons in rags, walking along dirt paths toward the promised land. In the West Bank, children die going to school. Others are slaughtered by suicide bombers. Electricity supply is restricted, and genocide a real possibility. I repeat, performance. Ziggy Schipper takes tourists round the Holocaust Museum. He tells them, never forget what happened, not only to Jews, but Poles, Gypsies, and homosexuals. The list does not include Palestinians or other peoples. He doesn't mention what is happening now, why his people turn blind eyes, see selective acts of terror. Perhaps victims seek to be cleansed of their unfathomable pain born with God's blessing, entitling them to torture and kill. Suppress beyond recognition the humiliation of their past, a distortion of the lesson on what was done to them. As for the man who showed me his arm, he has rolled up other sleeves, branded much flesh of the herd.
The last point is, curiously, I wrote it listening, watching, a friend of mine sent me, Doc Trainer sent me some photographs taken by a cousin of his who was way up there in a spacecraft. And I was very taken by these photographs. But certain things happened to that man up there, and I was wondering about this, but the photographs, the collection of photographs, were titled Blue Beauty. And this is for Doc and the astronaut Dan Kenny. While orbiting Earth, Dan's mother died overtaking his old school bus at a level crossing. He attended the funeral via satellite connection, then opted for a spacewalk. What he saw was truly amazing.
The oceans define gravity. Great river gods born as mountain trickles. A sandstorm advancing on the Canaries. The Antarctica diminishing. But what really caught his eye was the thin line between abundance and scarcity. Night and day. The twilight zone. It was then he realized the meaning of cohabiting a volatile beauty, of being alone in the universe, sharing the one cell. For a moment, he felt his mother go by on her ascent from heaven, bound for a distant star on this, his 47th birthday. The umbilical link to the craft, not lost to him in any way. But a minimum of it.